We are talking all about regenerative medicine today on the show. My guest is Dr. Kaushal Latifzai. He's the co-founder of Rocky Mountain Regenerative Medicine. It's a medical clinic in Boulder, Colorado that specializes in regenerative medicine. They have a lot of offerings. It's a really cool place. I'll link up their website. You can check it out. We're going to get into some of it today. To give you a little background on Dr. Latifzai, he's a graduate of Dartmouth Medical School and Yale University Emergency Medicine Residency Program, has been in practice for over 15 years and made the shift about 7 years ago, coming into the regenerative side of medicine. And so we're getting really pretty deep into peptides today and also... Sorry, I'm laughing because if you're watching on video, it is so windy out here in Hawaii. My hair is going crazy. Okay, sorry. Had to laugh. Excuse me. We're talking about PRP, platelet-rich plasma, and stem cells. He's talking about why he doesn't use like outside sources of stem cells, why he harvests them from someone directly, which obviously you got to be able to be kind of skilled to do that. So it's really cool that they offer that. We're getting into a little bit at the end about psychedelics and their therapeutic applications. He's also an advocate of that. So yeah, we'll go ahead and get into it. We're going to learn a lot about how you can regenerate your own body and be more proactive about your healing and your longevity. So let's go ahead and dive in. Here is Dr. Kaushal Latifzai. All right. So Dr. K, I was telling you before we got started here that I find often when people ask me about like injuries and what should I do about these things, you know, I've got something, I feel like I've got some tendonitis, or maybe I might possibly be partially tearing something. And I'll say, have you tried PRP or regenerative medicine? And they just look at me like a deer in headlights. And that is like almost every single time. So I'm like, wow, a lot of people don't even know that regenerative medicine exists. They just go straight to Western medicine and they're essentially given corticosteroids and told that they need surgery eventually, or maybe physical therapy. Like that feels like the route that almost everyone I talk to knows of, right? And so I'm really excited to have you here because you started in Western medicine. Like, can you tell a little bit of your story and how you got into regenerative medicine? And then we'll get into like what it entails.
Yeah. When I started in conventional medicine, and I still practice conventional medicine, you know, I hadn't heard of the utility of peptides and stem cell therapy as was the type of therapy that I associated with maybe cancer therapy. It wasn't really something that I knew a whole lot about. And you're right. I reach for what everybody else is accustomed to, drugs, medications, surgery. So it wasn't something that I was keen to in med school. And it's something that I sort of fell into and have actually gone pretty far in at this point. And I think the journey is sort of worthwhile discussing. So I started out, my undergrad training was in biology. I was an undergrad at the University of Missouri. And then, I sort of migrated to the East Coast for med school. I went to Dartmouth Med School, and then I went to Yale University for training in emergency medicine. And, once I graduated, I moved to Colorado. I practiced in emergency medicine at level one trauma centers, at small community hospitals. And it really gave me a unique perspective into how medicine in general is practiced. And from that experience, and I was doing that for about 10 years or so, you know, I understood from the inside how over-reliant, how dependent we are on some of the things that you mentioned, which is medications, which is surgery. And it really highlighted for me this reactionary, this reactive approach to our health, to our wellness that we take. In other words, we wait for something to break down, and then we are prompted to take action more out of necessity than anything else. And sort of stepping back a little bit, you know, I realized that that's just a consequence of the way that our medical system is structured. It has some strengths and it has significant weaknesses. The strengths are, if you actually have a broken bone, if you actually have some sort of an accident and it's something that requires surgery, like an appendectomy, this is a great country to be in. But when you're focused on optimizing your mind, your body. This type of health system really doesn't service very well because, mm-hmm. again, the way that the system is structured, the primary payer are the insurance companies. And if they're the primary payer, then the patient is really taken out of that equation. The patient really comes in secondary. So it's no wonder that when people are asking for optimization, the system really can't cater to them. And right. So that was the realization that I came to. That was about 7 years ago. And it prompted me to explore options outside of quote unquote hospital medicine or conventional medicine. And so do I still prescribe medication? Sure, I do from time to time, mm-hmm. Antibiotics, et cetera. But it's pretty sparingly. I really want to mm-hmm. emphasize empowering the person's own biology to heal itself. And there's certainly options available in terms of nutrition, exercise, that accomplishes that. But there are also these regenerative options that also augment our health in slightly different ways. And so I'm happy to discuss those further, but that's how I came to stem cell therapy, peptides, hormones. So there's a plethora of stuff that you do, but that's probably the crux of a lot of the stuff that we do here at this clinic. And I started this clinic about 7 years ago here in Boulder. With another physician, Dr. Voss Iliopoulos, and he's got a very similar background to me. And then we started recruiting a lot of the staff that were like-minded, including my wife, who's a nurse practitioner. She used to be an ER nurse, but almost everybody at our clinic are now, they've been formally trained in some aspect of medicine. So.
Awesome. Thank you for sharing that story and many kudos because it's very appreciated. You know, like sometimes I wonder, I'm trying to be sensitive to what I say. I don't mean to offend anyone, but I wonder what it's like when you have that awareness and I totally agree with everything you said. Like there's definitely a time and a place. Like antibiotics can save your life. You know, obviously it's not ideal when it's like overprescribed or whatever, but they can also save someone's life, you know? So, and surgery, if I get a car accident, like I definitely appreciate someone being able to like put me back together. But I often wonder what it's like when you do have that awareness as a medical doctor in that system, you know, it's like, it's kind of like you have a choice. You have this moment of choice of like what you're going to do with that awareness. And it takes a lot of work to do what you did and your wife and your partner and all of that. So it's really appreciated. And I appreciate you coming on the show too, because I want to get into a little bit of like options for people who have like maybe injuries, because this is the thing that I see. I think people are starting to learn about, you know, obviously hormones and that's kind of popular, and even peptides is getting more popular. But I find that this little thing of like, oh, something's going on with like my shoulder, or I've got like high hamstring tendonitis. They don't even know about regenerative medicine. So can you talk about if somebody's got some injuries coming on, what options are available to them?
Yeah, let's start with peptides first. Peptides are, if you've never heard that term, you know, they're smaller versions of proteins. So proteins are made up of something called amino acids. And some of these proteins are rather large. So they contain hundreds and hundreds of amino acids sort of put together. But it turns out in order to carry out certain functions in our body, you don't need the entire protein to get that job done. You need a small, that really the business part of that protein, which happens to be much smaller. In a lot of instances, it's smaller than 50 amino acids, and we refer to those as peptides. So a common example that you are probably familiar with is insulin. Insulin was the first peptide that was discovered. And again, it turns out that you don't need this huge protein to get sugar from the bloodstream into cells. You need just that small part that interacts with the receptor on the cell surface to bring about certain intracellular actions. And somebody was bright enough to be able to isolate that small portion, develop it in a lab. And these days, the insulin that diabetics have to take out of necessity, they're much smaller than the proteins that exist in non-diabetic individuals, even though we refer to both of them as insulin. And by that same token, since the inception of this field of medicine, people have discovered that there's a lot of other peptides that carry out other functions other than just getting sugar into cells. And a few that have been in the news recently, they go by names like Wegovy or Ozempic or semaglutide. There's other peptides that also sort of serve the same function. The reason they're so popular, the reason I say they're in the news these days is there these peptides, some of them were devised again for diabetics. I know we just got done talking about that. But one of the side effects of semaglutide or tirzepatide, which is a different peptide in the same class, is significant weight loss. And so it sort of caught the attention of the media because some of these individuals can, in some of the studies, have lost upward of 20 to 25% of their body weight. And obesity being as big of a problem as it is in the US and in particular in the Western world in general, that those two peptides are now in the news. But there's other peptides that we've been using for far longer that really pertain to our patients. And some of them are directed for boosting one's immune system, especially when it comes to autoimmune diseases, such as rheumatoid arthritis or lupus or Sjögren's. There's a whole plethora of those types of diseases. But there's other peptides out there that really augment one's athletic ability. Mm-hmm. And along those terms, there's some that will increase bone density or muscle mass. It'll allow an athlete to respond better to their workouts. There's other peptides that'll augment one's ability to recover from injuries. And essentially, really aggressive exercise is a form of injury. So the faster one can recover from those, the more workouts that they can squeeze into a day. And so some of these peptides have gotten a little bit of a bad rap because they are considered performance enhancing, which in my opinion speaks to their efficacy. It speaks to their effectiveness. But yeah, they certainly are on the list of banned substances according to some of these regulatory agencies like USADA or WADA. But for everyday individuals, they can have access to those peptides as long as you're not a professional athlete and you're sort of a weekend warrior, you're a semi-professional athlete. As long as you know those limitations that, yes, yeah, some of these agencies do kind of frown on their use because they augment an athlete's ability. As long as you understand that, for most people, they can use those peptides without issue. So that's peptide. Go ahead. Sorry.
Yeah. On that vein, which of those are you favoring these days the most? Because yeah. I've seen them kind of change and, you know.
Yeah. No, that's a really good question. A lot of these peptides are isolated from, we know about them because of human biology. So we already make some these peptides on some level. One of the ones that comes to mind was isolated from the stomach. And it's referred to as BPC-157. And that particular peptide is really important for regenerating tissue. And some of that research came out of Croatia that showed, and this was like in the 1970s. So this peptide has been around for a while. But what it showed was that it helps tissue regenerate muscle, tendons, bones that are injured. It's also sometimes referred to as the Wolverine peptide, referring to the superhero who regenerates tissue rather quickly. So I like the use of BPC-157. There's a couple of other peptides. One of them is a combination of two different peptides. It's referred to as CJC-Ipamorelin, two different peptides in one. And then there's a different one called Tesamorelin. And those two augment one's ability to produce growth hormone. Similar to some of the other hormones like testosterone, for instance, its level, its production in our bodies declines with age. And so and growth hormone is no exception there. Some of the what you want to be careful about, because the obvious question is, why not just take growth hormone then? It turns out that growth hormone is secreted in a cyclical way in our bodies. And if you eliminate that by introducing growth hormone, it gets rid of that cyclical frequency. And so it becomes this elevated plateau, and that could cause other issues, other problems, other side effects. But if you maintain that frequency, which is what these peptides do, they maintain that cyclic nature, of secretion, of growth hormone secretion, then you can get the benefits of growth hormone without necessarily risking some of the drawbacks. So,
So are you saying that you could take, like, let's say CJC, Ipamorlin combo, like you could just keep taking that like forever without coming off of it and it wouldn't affect your own growth hormone?
That's a really good question. So anytime, this is true, not just for peptides, but especially for hormones, this is true for other medications. If you're taking a medication, then it's probably replacing some function that will have occurred naturally in your body. Mm-hmm. And as biological beings, as dynamic beings, whenever that happens, our body's ability to do that something atrophies to an extent.
Mm-hmm.
In other words, if you take a medication that takes over and augments your own ability to do something, mm-hmm. You atrophy. Your body sort of forgets, quote unquote,
right,
how to do that something. And so and you build tolerance. You need a higher dose of that something to again hit mm-hmm. the mark. And mm-hmm. so that's a concept that's not foreign to peptides either, just like it's not foreign to any mm-hmm. of the other medications. So if somebody, I never prescribe these peptides lifelong. What I tend to do is cycle from one peptide to the next. And mm-hmm. if you do that, or if there's interruption in you dosing yourself, it helps preserve your own ability to produce those peptides. Mm-hmm. And that's really important. I think it on a sort of grander scale, what it highlights is, there are pharmacies out there that have become online dispensaries for some of these peptides.
Mm-hmm.
And they certainly, from a marketing standpoint, I think they're doing a great job of telling people about these peptides. But then mm-hmm. they leave it up to the individual themselves to order the peptides. And the drawback, I see several drawbacks because I've had patients who will come to me. On the one hand, the patients will say, hey, the cost, it turns out, is a little bit less if I order this from an online pharmacy as opposed to a compounding pharmacy.
Mm-hmm.
And there used to be an element of truth to that. But when you really look at how much of a peptide is contained in a bottle and do an apples to apples comparison mm-hmm. to the peptides that we would order for you from a reputable compounder, it turns out there's not much of a difference. And a lot of times it's about mm-hmm. the same. It's mm-hmm. the exact same amount of milligrams. Mm-hmm. But even if there are some cost savings, if you really read the fine print on those online pharmacies, they'll say this is not for human consumption, that mm-hmm. this is for research purposes only.
Mm-hmm.
It's only used in vitro, meaning in a test tube. So it's not for you. And if you call them to ask about dosing, they won't give you any guidance at all.
Yep. You're going to be really confused too, because you're going to have no idea how to mix it.
Like, you can make up some ground by going to these online forums, but ultimately, mm-hmm. The bottom line is they do have side effects. All these peptides mm-hmm. have certain side effects. You certainly don't want to be taking it for years and years. You want to kind of rotate. You want to have a few good peptides that serve your specific biology, your specific needs and objectives, and you want to sort of rotate them and not stay mm-hmm. on one for years and years. So
thank you for sharing all that. I tried, they don't do Ipamorlin by itself anymore, right? You can't get that by itself.
You can. Usually you can. It's mixed together because most people will order it together. Yep.
Okay. A few years ago, someone was going to come on the podcast. And so they gave me, a clinic like yours and they gave me 3 months and I tried Ipamorlin in preparation for that. And then they ended up closing that clinic and he shifted. So I still haven't had him on, I tried it for 3 months for that reason. And I mean, I'm already pretty lean and strong. I sleep really well. I feel like I recover really well. So it wasn't like I felt like I like needed it per se, but I will say based off my experience, I was like, I felt like I was sleeping. I'm a deep sleeper already, but I felt like I was sleeping so well that I was like ecstatically happy, like not ecstatically, but like very happy when I woke up, like super optimistic outlook on life, like tons of energy. I did feel like I was recovering a little better from my workouts. I felt a teeny bit more, like it was a little easier to be lean, a little easier to gain muscle. And so I would say my overall experience with it was extremely positive. Like I was like, okay, that could be a nice boost for the right person, you know, get the ball rolling. But I mean, if you look at the health benefits, like I didn't stay on it just because of what we just talked about. I thought, I don't know if I really want to be on this, like, you know, ongoing or something. But when you look at the health benefits, I'm like, it is kind of like pretty amazing little biohack, so to say, you know, like it's a lot of positives. So thanks for sharing about that. And
Sorry to interrupt, but yeah, there's no doubt that these peptides work, used in the right dose, used in the right way.
Yeah.
It's really important to get to know the patient and get to know their goals, because we've all taken stuff that our friend takes or family member takes,
right,
and it certainly works, but they may not serve you in the same way because your needs are different or your objectives are different.
Mm-hmm.
There's, you know, you mentioned sleep. There's a peptide called DSIP, deep sleep inducing peptide, or a delta wave inducing peptide, delta sleep inducing peptide. And that's really good for augmenting certain aspects of your sleep. But like, look, if you don't have any sleep issues, then there's no reason to take that particular medication.
Right.
Because it turns out that even though deep sleep is good, even though delta wave sleep is really beneficial, sort of sleep in general is really beneficial, and you need that, you know, sleep in its entirety as opposed to augmenting certain aspects of it. So if somebody has dedicated insomnia, that they've been diagnosed with it, it might help them out, but it may not help you out.
Right.
And so it's really important to understand that these options are available, but what are your goals is probably the next important question. So.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And I just want to really second your encouragement to go through some place like yours to get your stuff. Cause I'll have friends message me and they're like, I got some peptides online. Like, how much of this bacteriostatic water do I need to mix? I'm like, I don't know, dude. I don't know, man. Good luck.
There are a lot of bro science websites that are pretty good. And I should clarify, we don't make these peptides. There's a few compounding pharmacies around the country that we work with, that we know are doing things the right way. There's a lot of variability when it comes to compounding pharmacies. And frankly, I don't have much experience with some of these online pharmacies. I haven't ordered from them, but what gives me a little bit of pause is what I told you, which is one, like if you really do the math on how much you're getting per bottle, you're not saving a whole lot, and chances are you're probably paying the same amount. And then secondly, they're clearly saying it's not for human consumption, and maybe they're doing that to get around some regulatory hurdles. But ultimately, if they're not going to give you guidance on dosing, if it, you know, they can't vouch for the purity, absence of contamination, then why take the risk?
Totally. Yeah. You're like literally injecting it in your body. It's like a little disconcerting. Okay. Thank you for all that. Can we talk about PRP and stem cells? Cause I'm really curious to just pick your brain, like in your practice, like, do you guys do a lot of PRP, and what would be the applications for PRP that you've done? I mean, I know there's even like aesthetic, but I'm talking more like maybe like injuries. And how have you seen that work maybe in comparison to stem cell treatments?
That's a really good question. So PRP stands for platelet-rich plasma. And platelets are, they're not quite cells, but let's just call them cells. They lack a specific aspect of a cell, which is the nucleus. And so they don't quite fit that definition. But again, let's just call them cells. They're produced in the liver, and their primary function in the body is to form clots. So if one were to cut their skin or break a bone, that would be certainly an instance where you need that function of your body to be operating at its maximum. And it turns out that these platelets are full of granules that contain messengers that call on other cell types to arrive on scene. So imagine cutting yourself, and these platelets are one of the first entities to arrive. They stop the bleeding. They start laying down the groundwork for the healing process, which is going to then take weeks and weeks. And sort of to kick off that process, they release their contents, their granules. They undergo a process called degranulation. And those messengers are then picked up by the bloodstream, and it calls on other cell types to follow that scent, if you will, through a process nice. Called chemotaxis. And once it arrives on scene, they exit the blood vessels, they arrive on scene and they start directing traffic to try to heal. And the notable cells there are your stem cells. We have stem cells in our fat, we have stem cells in our bone marrow, areas that are really rich in stem cells. And then we have areas where we're sort of poor in stem cells. And a good example there is our nervous system, especially the central nervous system, where there's a paucity of these healing entities, the stem cells, which are the primary cellular repairman in our bodies. And so anywhere where we lack stem cells, we're going to be slow to heal. And that includes joints. As we're getting older, the number of stem cells that migrate from inside the bone marrow into a joint, into a disc in the lumbar spine, it declines with aging. That's just a consequence of aging. Earlier, I said your testosterone level, your hormones decline, your peptides decline. And here it is, something else that's going down, which are your stem cells. And usually that process sort of picks up steam or crosses over a critical threshold around age 40 or so. And so you might notice that injuries are starting to linger. Maybe you're doing the same types of exercise, but before you were able to bounce back from certain injuries, and now they're lasting longer and longer and longer. And a lot of those injuries happen to be taking place at a place where you don't have very many stem cells to begin with, which is your joints, your lumbar spine. And so the concept behind stem cell therapy is to take them from an area where you're stem cell rich and then introduce them, sort of bypass the traffic problem, bypass the blood vessels, and introduce them directly into an area where you don't have very many of these cells to bring about repair and regeneration. And so so that's what we do is stem cell therapy. We're able to take stem cells from bone marrow. We're able to take stem cells from fat. And there's pros and cons to each one of those methodologies. And overall, for a number of reasons that I'm happy to go into, it's more convenient to access those cells from fat and then reintroduce those cells into an area where you don't have very many of them. And it really would behoove that the patient to not wait too long to a point where their disease process, the thing that's causing them pain, is really advanced. Because if you do that, then whatever therapy you institute, even if it's medication, if it's surgery, they have less likelihood of reversing that disease process and working. And that's kind of a hard concept to explain to an athlete, right? Because athletes are used to the grind, they're used to the pain. It's worn as a badge of honor to get injured and push through it. And it turns out, like, the longer you wait, then you're doing more harm than good, because like most other therapies, stem cells, their effectiveness sort of declines the longer you wait and the more advanced the disease process becomes. So that's what sort of stem cell therapy is. Platelet-rich plasma, which is where this question began, it's a methodology for taking platelets in a volume of blood and isolating those and isolating the platelets, the proteins that are in the blood, and reintroducing those in a similar fashion into a joint or what have you, wherever the person is injured. And so the way we do it, there's different methodologies for this. The way we do it is probably take about 250 milliliters of blood, which is more than what most people are accustomed to if you're going in to do blood work at your doctor. But it's not a foreign concept if you've ever donated blood. Like, a unit of blood is larger in volume than what I just described. And so we take about 250 mLs and we spin that down a few times. And when you do that, you're separating out something that's a little bit more dense, which is the red blood cells, and trying to get rid of those. And you're really trying to isolate these specific healers in the body, the platelets, along with other proteins that also exist in our plasma that are also important for healing and regeneration. And once you get those, there's different applications, orthopedic being the primary one that we've used it for, but we've also used it for aesthetic reasons, for wrinkles or for regeneration of hair. And it's worked pretty well for those patients as well. So that in a big nutshell is PRP therapy and stem cell therapy.
Thank you for that. And I'm curious, like, I mean, cause like, I don't know, I've kind of been floating around in this world for a minute. So like sometimes I'll hear people tell me their story with stem cells and how it like literally saved their lives. And they were like, couldn't walk for like a year. And then they got stem cells and now they're like riding horses and stuff. Like I have like those people. And then I have people, I'm just being real, who like, are like, oh, I got stem cells in my knee and it didn't really, I don't think it really did that much. Right. Or, and then I have people who I got PRP from some hamstring tendonitis I had from my marathon running days. And it was like miraculous for me. And I just don't really know that many other people who have done PRP to get, you know, anecdotal, just, you know, experience. I'm just curious, like, have you found PRP to be very effective for certain applications? You know, like, wow, this, it does really well for this. And you know what I mean?
No, it's a great question. PRP, stem cell therapy, it doesn't work for everybody. Mm-hmm. That's for sure. So there's one aspect of, you got to do your homework and pick the right type of patient. And to that end, you know, what we do is sort of quote unquote vet the patient. How do we do that? Well, a lot of times we'll do a really extensive panel of labs. So it's really rare for somebody to just seek us out and only want to do stem cell therapy or only want to do PRP therapy. And the reason is it matters. The biology of the individual matters. What kind of biological milieu you're introducing these cells into
makes sense.
Has a huge impact. And so there's been plenty of instances where somebody sought us out for stem cell therapy, and then we have a discussion about their metabolic health, their cardiovascular health.
Right.
And, you know, a year later, it turns out we sort of totally got sidetracked for good reason, because it was a bunch of other things that we needed to address first. We don't just jump into stem
makes
cell
sense.
Therapy. And I should have mentioned, you know, the way we operate at our clinic is on a membership level for the most part.
Cool.
And so a lot of these patients who came in for stem cell therapy, you know, it became a second priority once it's pointed out to them, like, look, you're, for lack of a better term, you're really unhealthy. And we need to get you to a point where you're much healthier, where you can get more out of life than just this PRP therapy or this stem cell therapy. So that's one thing is you got to fix the biology of the individual before any of these other therapies have a good shot at working. And I can't tell you how many people have come to us just wanting peptide therapy because their friend's doing it or their family members. And it's like, well, like, let's talk about your health and how to get you to a much better spot first. And so once we check that box, even then, like, you're right, stem cell therapy and PRP therapy doesn't work for everybody, but for the vast majority of people, it has they exhibit significant improvement. And so there's still a little bit of selecting the right therapy for the right patient. Sometimes people will come in requesting PRP therapy, and it turns out that stem cell therapy is probably a better option for them. And then there's a lot of variability as far as these procedures are concerned. So the reason I highlighted how much blood we require for our PRP therapy, it turns out it matters how much blood you use, because there's certainly places that'll take like three or four of those little test tubes you provide to your doctor, and isolating platelets from that is going to be really, really limited. You can't squeeze water out of a rock. You can't squeeze more platelets out of a small volume of blood, because even if your process is super efficient, you're not going to be successful in doing that. And what we've done at our clinic, the way we came up with the volume of blood that we have, is because we actually track this stuff, just like we track all the biomarkers for all of our patients to see how we're doing. We've done platelet counts on different methodologies, different kits, and sort of have perfected like what is the optimal level of platelets that'll bring about good. And so this is our methodology that we've devised, that we've developed. We're not relying on somebody else's methods. And then when it comes to stem cell therapy, that's something else where there's a lot of heterogeneity. So when you said, hey, my friend, you know, for some people it works, for some people it doesn't. You know, there's two broad categories of stem cell therapy. One is allogenic, where you What's deployed are donated cells, cells that are totally foreign to the person themselves. And that's risky for a number of reasons, but I'll get into that. That's one category. The other one is autologous, where we use your own cells. And I discussed that earlier when I alluded to bone marrow
harvesting. Yeah, I wanted to hit on this.
Or fat harvesting. Because if you use allogenic therapy, you're really at the mercy of whoever is producing or manufacturing those stem cells. And in fact, when they've done studies and taken aliquots of those allogenic stem cells and tried to grow out stem cells, it turns out none grow out. And wow. I frequently hear patients coming in specifically requesting something called Wharton's jelly. And when they've tried to grow cells from Wharton's jelly, which is from umbilical cord, presumably cells from umbilical cord, it turns out there it's acellular. There's no cells in that concoction that they've, you know, that they've collected. And then the other piece is, even if there are cells there, these are proteins that don't belong to you. These are proteins that are foreign to you. And the reason that's important is your immune system is not going to be able to differentiate if these cells are there to do you harm or if they're there to do you good. And a lot of times, you know, nothing bad happens, despite what I just told you. But every once in a while, those immune cells, in the process of making antibodies against that protein, that foreign protein, it makes antibodies against tissue that are native, that's native to you. And it can lead to, again, this class of diseases referred to as autoimmune diseases. Now the cells are gone. It's years and years later. And now these cells, your own immune system is targeting your own tissue, and it's causing problems. Wow. And so it's a risk, in my opinion, to do allogenic stem cell therapy. Mm-hmm. And then even when it comes to autologous stem cell therapy, which is what I prefer, you sort of sidestep this potential for autoimmune disease development. There's a lot of heterogeneity as far as what kind of a process is used to harvest those cells. And that matters in how effective the therapy will be. So even though we use the term really frequently of stem cell therapy or PRP, the bottom line is, I think the important takeaway here is that there's a lot of variability between how these processes, these procedures are performed. It wasn't that long ago when, you know, we have several large orthopedic groups here near where I live. And I think that's the same as a lot of other major cities out there. They used to really scoff at PRP and stem cell therapy. And now every major orthopedic group around here, they have someone on staff who specializes in either stem cell therapy or PRP or both. So on the one hand, it's nice to get acknowledgement that they're finally catching on. On the other hand, you know, you question how invested they are in that form of therapy, because their bread and butter remains joint replacement. Their bread and butter remains surgery. And so, but you know, for your audience, it really matters researching the individuals, reading online reviews, going in and not planning on doing anything. Just meet the doctor, meet the staff, and sort of come away with an impression that's honest about your feeling for that clinic. And if it sounds like maybe they don't know the science as much as they you expect them to, then that's probably a hard pass that you should take.
Yeah, thanks. I appreciate that. And like, my many, many, many experience that kind of backs up what you just said with stem cells was just, I had a friend who owned a med spa, right? And so I was going into her place and I was like, okay, I'll try this girly stuff. I'll try like a microneedling, right? And so I did microneedling with PRP, okay, for my face. And they told me about the PRP. I was like, oh, you guys put PRP on people's faces? I didn't know that. That's cool. It's kind of like biohacking, health optimization. I was like, that's really cool. Let me try it. Tried it. I was like, wow, this was super effective. Like, I was like, I really noticed some benefits from this. And then I went in another time and the gal talked me into, she's like, oh, well, if you liked that, you should try stem cells this time. It's just a little bit more money and it's like so awesome. And I'm like, let's go for it. Nothing. it like made no difference hardly at all on my skin. And it kind of just, I'm sharing that with everybody because it kind of opened me up to like, wait a minute, maybe having my own body's stuff is a little more effective, you know? So that's my like really weak example that I experienced myself that kind of got me in the way of thinking you're describing here.
Yeah. And I think the allergenic products are basically off the shelf, right? Like the donated stuff. And so it's really the learning curve, the barrier to entry is really low. So, you know, I live here in Colorado and sure enough, kind of like wherever you had that experience, we have estheticians at these places, at salons, doing PRP, doing stem cell therapy, but using this allogenic product because you don't have to learn a whole new surgical technique. There's no, you know, unless you're being really negligent, there's no impetus to be mindful of sterile technique when it comes to allogenic product. But the barrier to entry is a lot higher if you're doing bone marrow harvesting or if you're doing a liposuction. You're not gonna be able to do that. And so, trust your gut, go in and just like, you know, interviewing several plumbers and picking the best one, this is your body. You should probably do the same thing with a doctor. So.
Yeah. Nice. Thank you. Okay. I have to keep you just a second longer because when I find a health professional and doctor who is talking about the legalization of psychedelics, I have to bring it up because it's been life-changing for me. And I know you have ketamine treatments already, and that's legally where we're at. But I was wondering if you could share your viewpoints on the legalization of psychedelics for healing.
Yeah. In Colorado, you're probably aware already if you're close to this topic, that psychedelics, specifically psilocybin, has been legalized for personal use, meaning you can grow mushrooms and take it for yourself. But look, we have patients from all walks of life, and I'm always envious of our patients. They've got really interesting lives, and they're really attuned to this stuff. And some of them are jumping in with both feet and establishing companies that serves different functions, you know, given this new legislation. But the science is certainly there. Where, you know, for years and years, we've pushed medications that everybody's heard of, antidepressants, anti-anxiety medications, other psychotropic medications. And it turns out, you know, it doesn't work as well as we thought. Mm-hmm. It can lead to other side effects, some of which are pretty serious and debilitating. And here we've got something in psychedelic medicine that has a profoundly better track record, whether it's ketamine, psilocybin, or what have you. And so what we do at our clinic is ketamine. That's what we're legally allowed to do, which is a medication that was developed in the 60s and 70s. It was used in the Vietnam War primarily as an anesthetic. And in most hospitals these days, it continues to be used as an anesthetic. When I used to work in the ER, that's what I used it for. It has, it doesn't suppress the respiratory system, which makes it an attractive drug for that. It can be administered a variety of different ways, but almost as a side effect, it was discovered that soldiers coming back from the Vietnam War who were exposed to this drug had less instances of depression and anxiety and PTSD and drug addiction and that sort of thing. And so it was studied for those reasons. And it turns out that ketamine, similar to other psychedelics, increases the concentration of BDNF, brain-derived neurotrophic factor, that helps form new pathways, new ways of thinking about stuff. It also increases the concentration of VEGF or VEGF, which increases blood supply to these newly formed pathways. And so a lot of other psychedelics do the same thing, psilocybin included. And so that's why you see some of the benefits stemming from those psychedelics. And hopefully this legislation is going to move to a place where we're going to be able to prescribe it. And at some point I think we'll get there where those, the specific ways of doing that have been hammered out and we can do that for our patients. But yeah, currently, it's been legalized for personal use and a lot of my patients use it for that.
Yeah, I was wondering where that's at, being in regenerative medicine in Colorado. Like, I'm like, can you, or are they doing that in Colorado? But not quite yet, I guess.
Not quite yet, just because some of the legwork hasn't been done as far as how this law is to be implemented. And so hopefully it's not going to be too long. There's a lot of people that are really dedicated to this cause working on it. And I don't think it's going to be very much longer. But look, I have patients who are very honest with me. I think in a way that they're probably not as candid with their regular doctor. Maybe they're embarrassed, but most of my patients do microdose. They do use psilocybin, just grow it themselves, or maybe obtain it from friends. So it is picking up steam, and there's other companies that are now coming online that will check the purity, the content of some of these things that up to now are just being made by individuals. So that way, once everything, all the kinks are worked out, and there are companies that are mass producing it, there's a check and balance there.
For
There's a
sure.
seal of approval there. So it's really
For
interesting.
sure. Yeah, right now, if you're lucky enough to get your hands on it, it's like, we grew these for in our yard with light, and we sang to them every day, and you're getting some high quality love right now. But when it get, yeah, that mass production thing, there definitely need to be some checks and balance. So thanks for sharing your viewpoint on that. And I'm like, no wonder you have some awesome clients and
No, they're
patients.
great.
All
No,
right.
they're really excellent.
Okay, so a question. So can people work with you remotely? The membership?
No, that's a really good question. Most of our members are here local, and so I see them around town, and they're members of our clinic. And then we also have this executive health program that it, competes with the likes of the Mayo Clinic, the Cleveland Clinic. All these
Nice.
major institutions out there have these ultra deluxe programs there, where individuals come in, maybe they're in town for 3 or 4 days, and they undergo really extensive testing. And our tests are much better. We're not just giving you access to the tests that most other patients have access to. These are tests that are highly reflective of one's risk for the most common causes of death. And what are Americans, what are Westerners dying from? It's cancer, it's cardiovascular disease, heart attacks, strokes, metabolic disease. And these tests really do a deep dive and give you a really honest assessment of where your health is. It's one thing to think you're really fit. I have plenty of patients who think they're really fit. It's another thing when you see your numbers put up side by side for age match controls. And then we also, as part of that executive program, work with physical therapists, nutritionists, and even when those individuals go back to wherever they're from across the US, we work with specialists local to them. So whatever is pertinent, whatever aspect of health maybe they're slightly deficient in and need help with, we don't just settle for any doctor. We'll do the research, we'll
Nice.
find the right a physician for them and direct them. And if they're open to flying elsewhere, then we arrange for that, where if
Wow.
there's a specialist that's really niche, we'll have them meet with that patient and
Nice.
give their input. So we do work with patients out of our immediate geographic area.
Wow, awesome. Okay, hopefully everybody kind of got the vibe of what you were saying there. If that's pretty awesome service that you guys have provided for people. And do they just go to rmrm.com, Rocky Mountain Regenerative Medicine, rmrm.com, if they
That's
want
our
to learn?
URL, rmrm.com,
That's nice.
and go from there. So
Okay, awesome. Well, thank you so much for taking the
great.
time.
Thank
Thank you for
you.
the work that you're doing and for sharing with our people today. Appreciate it.
Great. Thanks a lot.